what I was feeling being in the valley is like, just everything has to be 110% all the time. And just that, like, good is actually a really, really great thing.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels. Joshua Taylor, I'm very excited to talk with him because we're going to talk about life changes, big pivots, and how to stay true to your goals. And he's a design leader, entrepreneur who moved to Costa Rica and started Ordinary Ventures, a startup creating multiple experiment products, including Parrot.fm and a podcast app, which is one of the most recent products that he worked on. He actually just mentioned, yes, our podcast is already there too. Hey, Joshua.
How's it going?
The first one is about Costa Rica, which it's maybe like a biggest topic in your life. How do you, you know, as a designer, as a design director who worked on Credit Karma and Evernote, and you decided to then go to a sabbatical, I just want you to walk me through, like, what's your process that moved you in this direction to take the sabbatical year, and maybe like connecting to how you decided to move to Costa Rica too.
Yeah, man, it's a bit of a journey, but yeah, I'm excited to share a little bit about it. You know, I have had a couple times where I've gotten good breaks in my career, and they've been so helpful. Some of them have been really short, just like transitions between jobs, and some of them have been a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But this isn't really the first time that I've done something like this, although the last time was definitely different. I, after working for about five-ish years, I just really wanted a new experience, and I wanted to live in Barcelona. And so I had talked with my wife about it, and we're like, let's figure it out. We didn't know how to get visas. That's always like one of the hardest things. And so I found out that I could get a visa if I was in school. And so I was like, all right, I'm going back to school. And so I went back to school and went with the family. My daughter was born right before then, so we ended up with a 2-year-old there. And so that was like kind of break number one. While it wasn't like sabbatical, it was like take a step back and think about like really kind of try to be more intentional about where life goes. Mm-hmm. But like that's then I finished that in around 2010 to 2011. And then we're like, all right, now what? Do we stay here? There's like the crisis was like hitting Spain pretty hard at that time, like finding jobs.
Oh, so you were in Barcelona before that?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I was in Barcelona. I was in Barcelona doing school. God. And then you're like, what are you going to do after, you know, after I got my master's? I was like, do I go back and do this for a certain thing? And I was pretty wide open. And just got connected through the job search. I ended up finding jobs in San Francisco. I had been to San Francisco one time, but I didn't know anything about it. And so I kind of show up and I ended up at Evernote, and I was there for about 4 years, and it was kind of a, like the hot Silicon Valley company at the time. And, like everybody was pretty hot on it. And so it was exciting and fun to be there. And then things started to shift a little bit. I kind of moved on, but I think that like after about 9 years in the Valley, I just realized I was on, I don't want to call it a treadmill, but I was on a path. Right. And like my path was kind of set for me, and I was kind of moving forward. So then I was like, I'm 15 years into my career, and I'm still kind of doing what other people are asking me to do and kind of pushing me in that direction. And I wasn't super happy with what all of my options were. And we can definitely get into that a little bit more. That definitely gets into like, yeah, I think part of there's this dichotomy for designers of like, do you go into the IC path or a manager path? And I was always thought that was a false dichotomy and didn't like that tension. Mm-hmm. And so it was like inherent in me a little bit of a need to like kind of create something new, take a step back and reevaluate and just be intentional about what the next phase is of my life. So that was happening. And then I think the other part of just being in the Bay for almost 10 years was like, I found myself becoming a unidimensional person. Mm-hmm. And that's like I started to realize that over the last couple of years that I was there, I was like, I'm kind of into one thing. I used to be into a lot of stuff, into music and playing soccer, mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. all this type of stuff. But I was never really good. I wasn't particularly good at music. I wasn't very good at soccer. Like, I liked it, but like, I was in this point of like specializing everything, which meant that I only ever did tech startup-y stuff.
And everybody else working the same thing. That story, right?
All your friends do too. And yeah. like, it's easy to talk about, and everything's like some deal that closed or some new technology that comes out. And like, I mean, I love that stuff, but it was like just one piece. And I felt like there's this whole other piece of me that I needed to explore, and I needed to really kind of open that up. So we took a few steps along the way, and I talked with my wife, and we were like, maybe we travel the world for a year. We have two kids, so like homeschooling didn't seem like a great option, so we kind of ruled that one out. So my wife is actually from Costa Rica. And so she has family here, and we've talked about being down here for a long time. And we decided to take the plunge.
¿Hablas español?
Ya, ahora sí.
Un poco, sí.
Claro. Un poco, ya. So we did it. I do want to call out that, like, sabbatical is one way to kind of frame it. I think other people have framed it differently. I don't really care about the framing, but I do, like, I think it's important to call out that it is, like, just a huge position of privilege to say, like, I want to take time off from my career and come and do this. And that's just not something I'm really, really keenly aware that a lot of people aren't in a position to do this. And so I want to be like always kind of like clear. And when I talk about this type of thing, that it's not something that everybody can do.
Of course.
But that's why I kind of talk about that intentionality piece, where I think that like it was my way of getting intentionality back, and like saying that like I'm going to be intentional about what the next steps are of my career. So that was kind of like the impetus behind why we decided to come down.
Right. Interesting. And I think it still like takes courage to do it, even if you have the privilege. So I really found that very interesting, your journey to Costa Rica. And so you lived in like amazing cities, amazing places, right? Like Barcelona and San Francisco, now in Costa Rica. Is that anything specific that moved you to these cities besides the commonalities of like your wife being from Costa Rica? Is there anything that maybe connect the cities that you think it's like a team in your life?
I don't know. I haven't really thought a lot about like what connects them. I think that for me, and this is a big part, like I need change and I need a little bit of variety. And so generally I'm a person that needs like the buzz of a big city. I love big cities. Barcelona is just full of so much life. So I'm drawn to those types of places. If anything, Costa Rica was like, it wasn't the first time we thought about this, right? So it's been on the plate for 15 years that maybe we should move down here. And we've just kind of taken the plunge, and that's largely because it doesn't really fit my prototypical, like where I want to be. And so we were a little worried that we'd come down and be bored, or that it'd be too slow, or some of that type of stuff. But it hasn't been. So we've been pretty busy, and we kind of packed that with a lot of projects. So it's been
That's very exciting. Cool. Awesome. Now you're working at Ordinary Ventures, a startup in the studio where you launched Parrot, and you also mentioned other projects. Some of them you may be like sunsetted already. So what's your main mission with this? Like, what do you want to get with Ordinary Ventures?
Ordinary is actually it's a whole thing for me. It's Ordinary is actually just the term Ordinary is kind of this revolt inside of me against the system, against everybody trying to be so special and so extraordinary all the time. Like It's just, and that's kind of what I was feeling being in the Valley, is like, just everything has to be 110% all the time. And then yet you take a step back and there's so many things that like, just at 100% is fine. Just at like good is actually a really, really great thing. And so I kind of latched onto this idea of like ordinary as something that is beautiful, perhaps natural, really well done. And it's like the beauty in the simple things. And I think that like, that's something that I had started to lose a little bit, that everything needed to be so extraordinary, so special and so big that you actually skip over some of the small steps. You skip over like the impact that it has on people. You skip over like the impact it has on our society. You skip over all these, like, what is it a good product, to make sure it gets to a great product. And I was starting to feel that tension. So ordinary is actually like, kind of a new brand thing for me. And so actually my wife is doing interior stuff and it's under the Ordinary name. We're doing like a whole bunch of things that are kind of now under that name. We've got like some hospitality type properties that are like kind of putting under that name as well. And it's just kind of this idea that it's just good. It's like everything is good and right. And so I kind of wanted to take that philosophy into kind of a new venture. So that's kind of one piece. Another piece is that I was just excited to build stuff. And so actually to pick up from the sabbatical, I left and it was scary because I left and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And the whole point is like, there's always another step in front of you. And I want to intentionally not take that step. So I spent time intentionally, like while there were opportunities in front of me, kind of saying no. And that was like really hard. And telling people like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing next. This is a really scary thing. So I did a lot of like kind of intentional, like who am I, what do I want type things. Although I wish I was more structured about it. One of the things that I came up with is the times I always felt like I did my best work and I was the happiest were the same times. And that was at both Evernote and Credit Karma while doing a bunch of consulting. It's whenever I had multiple projects happening at the same time. And I was a little bit underwater, but not too underwater. And I was kind of balancing these multiple things. And so I was like, I was stimulated with having all of these different things going on. And that's when I could really like, yeah. So I just realized that like that inherent in what I wanted to do was I don't want to do one thing. And I started looking at, what I want to do for the next 10 years. And I've never been able to answer that question. I've never been able to like think that far out. And like, so answering where do I want to be in 10 years from now is like never a thing that I could even try to do, but I'm starting to kind of get there. And I love starting new things. And so like, that's like, I wanted to be able to create some sort of structure where inherent in it was change, not that like I'm going to be doing the same thing. And so I finally came to this place where I love building new things. I love launching new things. And if I could just do that for the next 10 years of my life, I would be happy. So then it became like, how do I do that? you know, how do you go about actually doing that? And so I've been toying with that over the last handful of months. I've already kind of changed a few times back and forth to try to figure out exactly what that model is. But I'm feeling pretty happy with that. So what we're doing is it's kind of two arms to Ordinary Ventures. One arm is launching our own products. And so, I'll tell you more about that. But then the other arm is actually a studio, and doing product design work. And so this is kind of fun because it helps me stay fresh. I get like, I'm involved in what a bunch of other people are doing. I'm working with startups every day. And that type of thing. And so like I get to like have that startup thing and apply a lot of my knowledge towards startups. But then I also get to launch all of our new products. And so like the core of it is launching new products. But I'm really aware that it's hard to launch products. And sometimes they come really fast. And you have ideas and you're ready to go. And sometimes it takes a long time. So that's kind of where we've been. Parrot is a podcast app that I had actually worked on. I started about 5 years ago. I started it and then stopped it. I had some developers lined up, and they kind of rolled off the project, and that was enough to kind of kill it for me. Because I was like, there's so many other things happening, and I just wasn't really in the place to do it. So I ended up picking it back up earlier this year, and I said, hey, I have this thing. It's halfway developed. Let's go ahead and put it out. So I'm really excited about that one, but it might not fit the model of how I would approach launching new companies in the future, because it's a consumer product, and you got to get a lot of people to use it. And really, you need just a big network effect for it to happen. And that's probably not how I would normally approach things for new products. But I am excited about that, and we're building new stuff for that. And we've got a whole new redesign that we're kind of coming out, even though we just kind of came out recently, because I had designed it 5 years ago and it already feels like it's old. So
I definitely want to try it. I love the idea of being able to comment on specific parts of a podcast. I saw the page, but I didn't use it yet. So yeah, looks awesome.
yeah. We're still getting going. But I think that the idea of being able to listen to podcasts, save the stuff that you want, have some sort of community around that, all that type of stuff, is there's a lot to be done there. And in the 5 years since I kind of initially started working on it, that space has matured a ton. So it's definitely a different landscape, but there's still so much that needs to be done and can be done to make podcasts really rich in the consumption of them. So I'm excited about it.
Very cool. I gotta say, I love the idea of the name. Now that you explained to me, I had like a vague idea about it, but it kind of reminds me a lot of Naoto on Muji, because he says like Muji is just right. It's just okay. It's not perfect. It's not like more than you need. It's just like the amount of functionality and, you know, it works, right? And that's it.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be more than that.
Yeah.
So I love that concept.
Yeah. That's like, we can have a whole diatribe just on being ordinary. That's a whole separate thing.
Cool. What are the highs and lows of working for yourself versus working in a super exciting company like Evernote in Silicon Valley? What are the, you know, the challenges and maybe like the, also the better versus the worst parts of being in your own company?
Yeah, I mean, in order to answer that, you kind of have to like, I think you have to go to a little bit like, why do we work in groups of people? And I think it's a little bit different between like working for yourself as like solo versus like working for a big company. Those are two things. And then there's a separate of like, I'm starting kind of my own thing. And I think that oftentimes it gets put, especially with designers for some reason, like really the two options seem to be like you go work for another thing or you work by yourself as like a lone wolf. I think I've always struggled with that too. I've never felt like a lone wolf type of person, which is why I think I kind of ended up doing more of what I'm doing now, which is like, I really want to be working with other people. I want to be building stuff with other people. And I think that's the energy that you get when you're working from a big company. At Credit Karma, there's about 1,300 people, something like that. Like there's some awesome, awesome people, and there's some good energy to like get to work with all of those people. And you just like, when you look around and you're like, that person's really smart and that person's really smart and that person's really smart. That's like, those are energizing, things that I think is really hard to replicate when you go small. Or especially when you go to one. I somebody else said it one time, like individuals didn't build a Boeing 747. There's certain things that you can't do on your own. And so I think that level of do something bigger than the sum of our parts, is something that you get out of great companies. And like I said, the energy, being on your own is tough. It's like, you got to figure everything out on your own. You have to like, I'm doing like compliance with the state of California and books and accountant crap and like bunch of stuff that I don't want to do and I wish I didn't have to do. So I try to minimize those, but you gotta do everything. And so I think that's kind of one of the downsides. The upside is you get to make it what you think needs to exist. And I think that's the thing that excited me the most. I looked around what people were doing in Silicon Valley. I looked at the types of companies that were being launched. I looked at the quote unquote missions that every company seems to have. And I didn't buy it. I was like, that doesn't sound like a mission to me. That sounds like a thinly veiled thing on top of your company. And so, that might be a little bit cynical, but I think that when you step out on your own, you can kind of create that for yourself and you get to create the environment that you think should exist. You get to create the, like, how people should interact with other people. You get, you know, there's the entire company and culture building thing that comes along with it that, you know, I wanted to build products that I thought had sustainable business models that weren't, well, predatory would be on one side of the thing, but I think a lot of business models just don't mesh with people. And as long as you're giving them away something for free and finding another way to monetize it, those are difficult business models for people. And so I wanted to be able to create something where I felt good about the business model of every single product that we were doing, that I felt good about the how we use the data on every single product, that, you know, those are all things that I've seen too many times, like how a business model can make bad design decisions and bad human decisions. And so I was excited to get to do some of those. And so it was a pretty, you know, I think that's what you get when you step out on your own. You get to create all those. The downside is you have to create all that stuff. So you're like, it's a lot of work to do all that type of stuff. But the upside is definitely you get to create something that you wish existed.
Yeah, it's a blank canvas. Awesome. Very nice thoughts. And I'm curious about this, like talking about in the vein of your transition, do you think you're able to use some of your learnings here in Silicon Valley to your ventures, or do you think they're like totally distinct kind of challenges and contexts?
I think that they're 90% similar. I think that, you know, in that transition time where I was kind of taking what we're calling sabbatical, I explored a bunch of other stuff. And so that was really important to me, to explore things that weren't even design related, and definitely not product app design related. So we looked at like coffee shops, and we looked at, is it possible to start a hotel, which is things that we had always talked about. So in those cases, I think that like one of the reasons that as I got further into those things, I was like, I feel confident, for example, that we could launch a boutique 20 room hotel. But I don't know anything, but I feel confident that I could learn it on the job, but I don't know how to do any of that. And so in that case, I really didn't feel like a lot of like all of the skills and everything I've spent time building and learning, I didn't feel like I was going to be able to apply a lot of that. And I really felt like I was going back to complete ground zero, which I thought maybe was something I wanted to do. But through that process, I realized that I didn't want to go back to total ground zero, and I did want to transition a lot of my skills over. So I'd say that, like, you know, I spent a lot of time, well, the last 10 years have been startups, right? So it's been either startups that are kind of growing in that growth phase, or I've worked with a lot of companies just helping them get their very first idea off the ground. So I felt actually really close in to what I had done before. I think the investment part of it, or put on your investor hat. We don't have any investment yet, or maybe ever, but that whole side that you have to like really think about, like, which, like, we've got 10 ideas on the table, which one of these is going to be the one that we should really invest in and put time into. that's something that I wish I had more experience to draw on. And so I end up calling friends and asking for a lot more feedback and that type of thing. So I know a lot of those people, and that's good. But that, I would say that's an area that it doesn't translate quite as well. But the idea that, like, the reason I ended up here is I wanted to launch products from zero to something that lives in the world. And that's something I had done a lot of times in the past. So that's something that I felt really confident in. So that whole skill set was something that I felt like I could do. The hard part was like, okay, but how do you make an app that you just launched actually successful?
Yeah. And I bet it's like it's a segment that for like early stage startups, it's very hard for them to hire people. So it's nice they're kind of like augmenting them and enabling them to think about the product side and the design side. I think in the past we had like organizations or how can I say like consultant companies like Adaptive Path. But nowadays there's less and less. I feel like most of the companies have in-house. So yeah, I definitely feel like it's a big area to explore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that there's a, there's actually quite a few companies over the past handful of years that are mostly venture companies that have taken a similar type of model. And they've said, you know, we're going to invest in a bunch of small companies, get them off the ground. And there's been ones that have done that from zero, from idea or like even pre-idea, all the way to like, you know, it's already kind of been around for a while. So there's definitely a lot of examples there, but a little less on the Adaptive Path type side. But there's quite a few there. I think that one of the challenges for me was a lot of those companies were venture companies, and inherent in the premise is that we are trying to find the next billion-dollar company. And I think that so a lot of my premise was if the traditional knowledge says we start new companies and put new products into market looking for the next billion-dollar company, is there a different way? Like, what about everything that's not a billion-dollar company? $100 million company? That'd be pretty awesome. So in like big and impactful and meaty project, I'd be very proud and happy to run one of those. But what I've seen is a lot of companies that are $5 million companies don't have anywhere to go unless it's like raise money and go for the big billion-dollar thing. And actually, Evernote was a perfect example of that as well, where it was actually a great app, a functional app, a very, like, people loved it. We had 160 million people that used the app around the world. It was, by all intents and purposes, great. It was growing. And all of this stuff, like, started coming out that Evernote was, like, kind of tanking and all this type of stuff. It was, like, a really funny cycle when Evernote started to not become popular because it wasn't about the success of the company. The company was still growing. But the expectation, once you raise money and once you've started growing, once you 2x, 3x, 4x, you can never do anything besides that again, or else you're letting everybody down. And so I think that in that process, a lot of really great companies, a lot of really great products get thrown to the wayside. And so that's a lot of what I've been looking at is like, how is there another way for us to build really great products that have a big impact in the world? But don't necessarily have a line of sight to $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think it goes back to like good enough, big enough, you know, like why we need to grow things to a crazy scale all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, all of them, I can dream of them being these massive scale things. And, you know, eventually it's however big, you know, any idea that I play with, I want to have some sense that it could grow beyond my wildest imagination. But that's just not my focus. That's not like what we're trying to do. And I think when you do that, that's when you can then do it right. You can do it well. You can treat people well. You can pay people the right amount of money. You can make sure that their data is safe. You can, you know, all those things become a lot more possible.
So a few years ago, you wrote an article, and I was searching about you on the internet, and I found this article. You wrote, "Designers shouldn't code, they should study business." Does that still true to you? And what do you recommend for designers trying to understand more about business? Which I think it's a very common topic that I try to talk about here in this
podcast. Yeah, it's funny. That article, I've written other articles. That article was like, by an order of magnitude, way more popular than anything else I've ever even kind of written. Not even close. So I thought it was hilarious that it was popular, mainly because I intentionally did a clickbaity title. I felt a little dirty about it. Yeah. And it was like, I felt a little dirty about it, but I was like, whatever. I thought I just did it to be like tongue in cheek because I thought it was funny. But I realized later that like how many people like really responded and had these like strong opinions. And I was like, okay, great. I didn't know I was going to strike that nerve, but I'm glad I did. I think that like there's no magic bullet. I think it's still true. Just to be clear about the clickbaity title, I think that the tongue in cheek part was they shouldn't code. Using that as a piece, you can code all you want. I don't care. But I think that the thing that I was seeing was a lot of designers really focused on craft, focused on how things look, the interactions, the like the fancy things, and like really stuff that other designers care about was the thing that they would be spending their time on. And then they would go and then they would keep saying like, I want a seat at the table. Designers need a seat at the table. Designers need more. And you're like, but you don't know how to have a conversation at the table. And you don't know like what the main drivers are for success for this company. And so I just started seeing that. I saw that in myself. I saw that in other designers. And so that's kind of a lot of like where that came from. Like I said, there's not a magic bullet. I think actually a lot of people have kind of followed up with me and said, like, should designers go get an MBA and stuff like that? I was like, wow, that's way further than I would have ever taken it. So maybe if that's something that strikes you. But I think it's more that, like, we have to know the impact of the work that we're doing. And who is it having impact for? Where is it going? Why did they ask for this thing? And so you can ask a lot of questions in your current organization, like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing it now? Who is it affecting? What does success look like? What if we didn't do this? And push on some of those things to really try to understand. And that's like really understanding the business case for why you're doing these things. And then you can start be involved more and more in those conversations as you understand that more and more. And as you have more experience reaching, being able to talk with like maybe your executives, you know what's important to them. You know that they're asking you to design this new feature, or push this new version of the app or something like that. And you think that like, hey, it's a chance to get a new nav bar in. And they're saying like, my retention is tanking. And if my retention is tanking, I can't raise another round, which is exactly what happened at Evernote, by the way. So things were going down. We like iOS 7 came out. It was a big struggle. Like retention was the thing going down and we were paying too much attention to like UI and like creating those types of things. You're like, we don't like fix retention and we don't fix growth. Like that's the only things we should really be focused on. So there's kind of a disconnect sometimes between like what designers want and what the company actually needs. Being able to dig into those things, I think is really, really important. The other side of that is then you can really start to influence the impact your product is going to have. And so like at Credit Karma, we're dealing with finance for people that have bad finance. So there's a lot of stuff we could do that would be good for our business, but bad for people. And so those were, if you're not able to have a business discussion, then they're going to say, just put the thing in the market that is going to get more clicks. And we're just going to assume that that's good for people. That's why they clicked on it. And so you have to be able to tease those things further and take them another step further and allow executives, allow people in from a more business perspective to be able to see what the impact is of all of these decisions. And so I think that like that was kind of the point of the article, is to really kind of understand the impact on the business. And then I did a not necessarily a follow-up, but I did another article, I guess last year, that really kind of delved a lot more into like the impact that we can have as designers. And I think that those two things are really kind of connected, is that like we can have way more impact, but not if we're just focused on like, here's these pretty pixels and hey, here's this new design interaction. And those things aren't bad, but we need to know why we're doing them.
Do you feel this is because designers somehow also have this like tendency to be perfectionists, or do you think it's another trait of designers?
I don't think that's the right narrative at all. Personally, I think there's a bunch of other people that are perfectionists. It's that like designers, I don't know exactly. Well, I want to get, how much, we have got a few minutes. I won't go very long into this, but one of the things I kind of alluded to in that other article is this idea that there's kind of different layers to design, and like on the outer layers are the things that are easy to talk about. They're the things that are pretty, that are easy to put on Dribbble. And what happens is it's easy to have those conversations. It's fun to have those conversations. We pat each other on the back and we're like, high five, thumbs up. Like, that's great. That's really pretty. Eventually you have to go start having other conversations. And for a while in your career, what's happening is you started with those kind of more superficial things and you're going deeper and deeper and deeper. That's awesome. You're just becoming a better designer. But a certain point comes where you actually have to go deeper, and you can no longer continue to go deeper and do all of those little pixely things. And that's where I see a lot of designers come up to a crisis and they're like, what do I do? Do I go into management? Do I go into keeping an IC? And you're like, that's missing the point a little bit. It's really about like how much impact, what type of impact are you having? Is your product having an impact on the world? And the further you go down, and it's harder to talk about, it's harder to do those types of things, but you're having this deeper impact that's maybe even a little bit hard to put your finger on. And I think that's one of the tricky parts.
Let's connect this to the next question, because the next question is about IC versus management, which today is how most of the companies have the separation for two pathways, right? Either you create a vision for a product, or you specialize in craft, or you manage teams and you create new teams. And you're very interesting profile, because I feel like you have a mix of both. Like, how do you see that division, and maybe like, what do you think would be ideal for the future?
Yeah, I don't, a lot of people have thought about this. Definitely people have thought about it more than me. I think that my first is that, and if people want to reach out, I'm happy to share that article. I go quite into depth on some of that. And I think that there's a false dichotomy that happens. But I also think that like it's realizing what happens is you get to a point in your career where it's unclear what the next step is if you kind of don't want to be a manager. And I think that's the real kind of problem, is that you can just keep making apps, but I've already been making apps, right? Like, what, so am I going to just keep doing this indefinitely and never grow or never doing anything else? That's the friction that I see with a lot of places. So then with those, what's happening is with those tracks, they're kind of artificially giving you extra space to keep you in that place because you're quite good at your job. But I think if you kind of shift that into like the type of impact and where we have that impact, And so a bit of a more fruitful conversation. And so one of the things that at Credit Karma we had started to introduce, it never fully grabbed hold, was this idea of the type of impact. So rather than individual contributor and manager, we kind of split things into organizational impact and direct impact. And direct impact would map more to like an IC type role. So like a manager, really the impact they're having is on the organization. Like they're making the organization work. They're making the people in the organization work better, work together, and do that type of thing. So like they're having organizational impact. That has been the thing that like everybody says organizational impact is like, if you kind of classify it as managers, well, you're like, that one's better because it's over other people. So I think just the nomenclature is unfair. So we classified it as organizational impact, in which case, like you're influencing the CEO, you're influencing other people. That's a very important job. But the direct impact track is like you're going to have direct impact on the products that directly impact people. So there's still a layer of abstraction in between, but you can directly impact those things. And so we're going to give you as much freedom as you need to. As you continue to get more and more senior, maybe you're having direct impact on a really big platform. And it's like a whole new platform. The platform itself is going forth into the world, whether we like it or not, because we've decided that. But like, how is it going to go into the world? Is it going to be a net positive? Is it going to be good for the business? All those types of things don't need to be figured out by managers. And so people working on the product can figure some of those things out. So we were kind of like, I was trying to reframe it a little bit there at Credit Karma, which really resonated with some people. I think it resonated a lot with designers, because I saw almost every designer I ever worked with that came up to that, that could see two steps away that they might have to make a decision between IC and manager, and zero of them ever knew what they wanted to do.
So unfortunately, we're getting to the end here, but I want to give you some space to share anything else you want to talk about, make your pitch, or give a link about Parrot FM, whatever you want to do. This is your space.
Awesome. Thank you. This has been fun. I love this. Yeah, I mean, for sure, if you haven't tried Parrot, go to parrot.fm, sign up, or go to find Parrot for Podcasts in the App Store on iOS. I'm trying to figure out what to do next with it. I've got a few other projects in the hopper that I'm working on, but Parrot is out there and I'm trying to figure out what the next steps are. I know it is imperfect, and it has not met my ordinary equals good bar yet. I would love for people that are here to like download it, check it out, and give me like honest, candid feedback. I've actually seen a couple people in here already that have done that for me, and it's been incredibly valuable. The other thing I'd say is Ordinary Ventures is a thing that I'm very excited about. I want to work with a lot of other people. Right now it's way too much me, and I really want to work with other people. So I'm really open to how some of those things work, but like to the extent to which people want to pitch in, team up, have an idea they want to like do something, have a skill that they want to use or practice, or you know, anything like that, I'm super open on those types of things. And that's kind of the fun part. That's one of the parts that I said is hard to replicate when you're not in a big company, is having those people. So I'm looking for more and more people that I can get to know and work with and that type of thing. So reach out. Twitter's kind of where I'm most active these days. Joshua N. Taylor, same as my Instagram handle here. Joshua N. Taylor. This Instagram's mainly family random stuff, but Twitter's a better place to hang out.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I know we're going to get kicked out. Thanks for your time. This was really enlightening for me.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.
My name is Koji, and this is Cells and Pixels. Every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. Thanks for listening.